Well, welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in uncertain times. My name is Bridget Tyer. And today, as always, I am joined by my trusty colleague and co-host, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, say hello to folks and tell them how you're doing.
Hey, everyone. Hope you're doing well. I am well today. Thank you very much. Yeah, as we record this, we're coming out of September, which is kind of crazy where this year is going to. We're going into October and fall will be upon us before we know. But I'm curious about today's discussion. It's actually, I think, really timely. It really, as I thought about it, you know, and you're sharing with me what you're going to bring up today, it really does have an impact on us personally in our careers. So, Bridget, why don't you share a little bit more about what we're going to dive into today?
Yeah, this topic of speaking truth to power is what's on tap. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna explore together, you know, what does that really mean? What does it look like? Why is it so darn hard to do? Because I think it is. And why is it such an important leadership and career skill? It ties really directly to being how we define what a resilient leader does, right? At the beginning of every episode, we say it's about leading with calm, clarity, and conviction. Conviction is really at the heart of what it means to speak truth to power. Yeah. Mm. So maybe an interesting place to start is, where does this phrase come from, this idea? Because it's certainly not new. I mean, you know, Irvin, do you remember when you first heard speaking truth to power?
I think for me, it came up in the context of growing up in the north of Ireland. Mm. And it grew up where, you know, there was a discussion around the abuse of power and one community abusing power over another. Mm. And there were figures that emerged. There was a civil rights movement there back in the 60s and 70s of actually women, housewives, et cetera, who said enough. And they were protesting. I think that's the first, I don't know if we called it truth to power, but certainly the concept and the action of that, that's where it became a reality of someone, you know, speaking up. And when in reality, they were being told to stay in their place and know their place.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Mm. Yeah, well, you know, the phrase has actually been attributed, I think, to a number of people and organizations over the years, but most people recognize the Quakers. Mm. And one particular Quaker by the name of Bayard Rustin as the original source of this phrase. Mm. And apparently in 1942, Rustin, a Black Quaker and a principal organizer of the March on Washington, wrote that the primary function of Quakers was to speak truth to power.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm. Yes.
But you know what? It goes back even further than that, all the way to the ancient Greeks. And they had a word for this, which was parousia. And that derives from the Greek words pan, which means all or everyone, and rhesis, which means speech or discourse. And so even way back then, you know, that word referred to a certain kind of speech that was bold and frank and candid, especially when you were speaking truth to those in authority, even at personal risk. So, and for the Greeks, the idea was rooted in the idea of speaking truth for the common good, which I love, right? It wasn't just to hear yourself talk, you know, but there was a bigger principle at stake. And I want to share one other definition of this from a thought leader, David Gertine, who said this, because this is an interesting thing, Irvin, and I'm going to be curious about what you think of part of his definition. So he said, speaking truth to power is to express our opinions frankly and openly to people who have some form of power over us.
Mm. I like that because I think it's not just about speaking truth, because anyone can speak truth. I can tell you what I think. That's an opinion. But there's an element there of risk that I think we have in here. You introduce someone who has some power over you. Now, that may be your own internal thinking that they do, or it actually may be actually correct. This person does have. And I think that's what makes this so interesting, is that risk. There's a risk that requires courage here.
For sure. And power over us, as you're pointing to, doesn't necessarily mean positional power. It could be emotional power, psychological power, right? Think of somebody at work who is actually just your peer. They don't have positional power over you, but maybe you don't actually speak up boldly and frankly to this person because they have this way of reacting that really puts you on your heels.
Yeah.
You know, or like classic example of a person who's an adult and fully grown, but still holds back when they talk to one of their parents.
Yes.
And, you know, clearly the parent doesn't have positional power over them anymore. So, you know, the bottom line is that speaking frankly and openly to people who hold some kind of power, some form of power over us, is not easy. It's actually kind of hard to do. So, Irvin, you know, as you reflect on your own life and your own career, has it been easy or hard to speak truth to power for you?
Wow. This is something I really battle. This is very difficult for me. And I think certainly earlier in my career, I think it came up against, I have a very, in the ocean, the psychological set, I'm very high agreeable. So there's my agreeableness battling against wanting to be liked, and truth to power risks. And I don't think I did it well. I can pinpoint a few experiences in leadership where really I should have said things to the board earlier and been more direct, and I wasn't. And I think there was fear in that. However, there's also something that I noticed, that there were times when I did take some risk, and I'm wondering what made that different. And I think upon reflection, what made it different is that I was speaking up for people who I felt didn't have a voice. And that made me angry. There was an anger there of either injustice or just disrespect for people. And I think that moved me, because I think it put me in a mindset that yes, but I'm speaking for others. And I think that's interesting for me. Now, as I get older, I think I'm less concerned, but I think that's an interesting discussion. I think it's still there for me. I think, what am I speaking and who for?
I totally relate to that. And I bet a lot of our listeners do too. I think it's easier to speak up for your team or for an individual that, you know, you just care a whole lot about than it is sometimes to speak up just for self. That seems more risky.
Yes.
Yeah. I too struggled with this. And I think about a time when I got really inspired by a colleague. She was going for a job interview. She really wanted the job. It was a big deal. And the final step was a panel interview. You know how we all hate those, right? There's like five people staring, staring at you. And she said the interview was going really well. And she was just being her authentic self. And she thought, you know, I think I have this job. And then the finance guy spoke up and said to her, you know, one of the things I'm really looking for in this position. Now, mind you, this was a VP of talent development. Okay. He said, you know, one of the things I'm really looking for in this person that we hire is that they have as a strength, financial acumen. Okay. I mean, you know, he's the finance guy. So I guess he would do that. And so she told me this, she said to him, well, if that's one of your most important strengths that you're looking for in the person that you hire, I'm not your person. And the panel was very quiet. And, you know, she thought she lost the job. She got it. And I always remembered that because, in fact, one of the people on the panel said to her, it was when you spoke up candidly to him, you didn't pretend anything. You said, and she said, that's when we knew you were the right person for the job. Isn't that interesting?
I love that.
Yeah.
So, Bridget, I'm curious, you know, we've talked a little bit about there's nuances in this. Let's explore a little bit more. Kind of what comes to mind for you when we think about speaking truth to power?
I want to take this now to a very practical level, because I think sometimes we think of this as like, oh, you know, historical figures who are known for bravery and boldness, right? You know, but little old me, you know?
Yes.
But there are lots of everyday interactions that require what the Greeks referred to as parrhesia, right? So let's name some of those, Irvin. So the first thing that comes to my mind, because I was just coaching a client on this, is diplomatically but firmly pushing back on an unreasonable deadline from an important client. They've given you this deadline and, you know, you might well, first of all, you fear disappointing them, but maybe in the case of my client, you fear losing the business.
Yeah.
But my client knew she couldn't deliver. Right. So that's like a common example, I think. How about just you're sitting in a meeting and there are some, your boss is in the meeting, there are other stakeholders above you in the meeting, and people are discussing views about how to handle a particular situation, and you have a dissenting view based on something really clear and important to you.
Yeah.
Can you speak that dissenting view? Mm. Because you are speaking truth to power there. They might look at you and like, huh? You know? And then, like, I think one that's such a personal example is having to advocate for yourself in some way, like ask for additional resources, you know, really make bold requests that are required for your success, and then holding your ground when someone says, what? Mm-hmm. You know, wait, why do you need that? I mean, those are just everyday examples that require us to develop this muscle, right? Yeah. What comes to mind for you, Irvin?
Yeah, you know, I think there's two others that come to mind. One is just actually, it was our old coaching session, actually, with someone I was having a few weeks ago. And basically, it's saying no to something. The situation was, you know, it was in the federal government, and we know that there's been a lot of layoffs. And so in certain situations, there are people who are being asked to do something, then they just don't have the time to do it. And yet there's this still expectation that I'll say yes. And so it was around, you know, kind of that, no, actually the appropriate thing is, no, I can't do this. It's difficult for people. And it was very difficult for this client of mine. And I'm just not the right person for this. So I think saying no sounds so easy, and yet it's not, especially when you're saying no to someone in power.
Right.
And then the other one is, I think at times we have wisdom and expertise, and at times we have to fall back on that. And so sometimes I think we don't speak up from that expertise. And maybe what's required is that the leader in this moment needs that expertise and needs you to speak up, even if it's disagreeable or even if it's something they're against. And sometimes people hold back and they don't. And I think that's a really practical example as well of where this comes up.
Yeah, those are such good examples. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking that if you are working for a decent leader, they want to hear the truth.
Yeah.
Now they might, that doesn't mean they're going to like it in the moment, right? They don't always react in the moment, but actually most leaders go, you know, want the actual information that's going to help them and the organization.
Yeah.
And I think, isn't that important to remember that, okay, I might get some uncomfortable pushback in the moment, but in the end, I'm going to trust that the people around me actually want to hear the truth as I know it, because that helps them make better, more informed decisions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
We forget that.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So all of this is easier said than done. You and I both admitted that this has been challenging for us. I'm thinking of our listeners, and they're probably also reflecting on their experience and realizing it hasn't always been easy to speak frankly and openly to those people that have power over them, some form of power. So I don't know. I think it's interesting, and it might be helpful to explore with folks, Irvin, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, is like, what does make this so hard? Why do we as human beings struggle somewhat? Now, some of us struggle more than others, but I think it's hard for people in general. Why?
Great question. I think, first of all, a great jumping point for this is to really explore, you know, what is our relationship to power and authority? Like how have we grown up? So I think we all have grown up in families of origin, and those families of origin have a message around, you know, do you speak up to your parents or not? How do you deal with other adults, et cetera? I grew up, and it was instilled within me, never misspeak to an elder as well. And it was very clearly that you know, that I'm there to be respectful, et cetera. And if I have an opinion, you keep that to yourself. So that's very interesting, you know, that, and that reverberates. And then careers as well. look, I've had the privilege to do quite a bit of work with people who work in the military or maybe transitioning out from a military career. And it was very interesting, you know, when you do kind of teach leadership, you know, to people that are in the military, they think, well, there's a line of command and that's it. There is no questioning. You take the command and you do it. And as you transition out from that into, I say, a corporate setting, then it's like a whole new role. It's like, oh, what do you mean? I get to say no, et cetera. And that can so it's so ingrained within us. So I think a great starting point is, how do I approach authority? What is my relationship to power? Then I think another one as well, which goes back to some of the basics, is that sometimes this is really difficult because some of the instinctive needs that we have as human beings feel threatened.
Yeah.
And I mentioned before in a previous one, you know, there's five basic needs we all crave for control, for safety, for approval, for belonging, for certainty. And there's three there that are absolutely, you know, binging when it comes to speaking, you know, truth to power. The first one is safety. Will I be safe? You know, what's the risk? You know, I prefer not to risk too much. And we've talked about risk. The second one is approval. It's like, you know, I need approval. I mean, this is big for me. And I know that's what's held me back in my career with this particular skill is so I would rather get the approval and not speak up.
Yeah.
And then the other one is belonging. That's deep within us to belong to a group, et cetera. And again, it's this risk, you know, if I speak up, do I risk being ostracized? Do I risk kind of not being part of the in group? And so these needs have a hold on us. I think at times we forget how instinctual it is within us and how much speaking truth to power goes against that instinct. And that, I think, is a clue to why it is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, I think, is a knock on from that, and that's the risk of being seen negatively. I think we all want to be in our careers, you know, it's like, oh, well, we're a person who brings people together. We're a person who cooperates. We're a person that eases things through. And then sometimes to be frank and open to people risks that is like, ooh, people are going to see me negative as complainers or that I'm not loyal. I'm not loyal to leadership, et cetera. So I think those are three that come to mind. So I'm curious, like, do they resonate with you? Anything else that you would share that kind of shed light on why this is such a difficult muscle?
Yeah, well, that whole loyalty thing, oh gosh, I just think a lot of the leaders that I coach, when I ask them, like, what are some of your values? And it's not unusual for them to say loyalty. And I always think, how do you handle it when people say something that really challenges you? Because I think you can look at that as an act of being, you know, disloyal,
yes.
Right? So that I can relate to that. You know, actually, while you were speaking about those instinctive needs, I had a childhood memory pop into my head. Now, you know how you were saying that in your family of origin, you were taught that, you know, children should be seen and not heard kind of a thing?
Yes.
I think that's a generational thing, right? So some of that went on in my family. But I remembered this one time that my family were sitting at the kitchen table, right? So four children, both my parents, I'm the youngest. And something was being discussed, and I do not know what to this day it was, but my dad was saying something. And I remember that I spoke up and I said something that went against what he was saying or kind of made a little bit of fun of it or something. I cannot recall what it was. And he got up from the table and he left.
Oh.
He left the meal and he left the house.
Wow.
And there was no fanfare. There was no screaming. There was no nothing. It's just he got up and left. And I thought, wow, if you speak up, people might leave.
Yeah.
You know, in that whole approval thing. Isn't that interesting that memory came?
Really, and it's interesting that has stayed with you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, point being that we all have experiences that shape our tendencies and our willingness to speak truth to power. And it's just helpful to be in touch with what some of those influences are.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. So I'm curious then, I mean, that was such a great example. We always try and embody some of these practices in examples. I'm curious, as you think about someone who you feel embodies truth to power? What comes to mind for you, Bridget?
Yeah. So the example that has inspired me most actually comes from my daughter when she was 6 years old.
Oh, wow. I love that.
And I wrote about this in the book that I co-wrote with Heather Jelks, Missing Conversations, because it so inspired me. Mm. And it has stayed with me ever since. Okay, so she's 6 years old. She's in first grade, right? And she comes home from school. This is early in the year. And she is telling me in her behavior and eventually in words that she's scared to go into her classroom. Right? And I'm like, well why? What is so scary? And I have to really coax it out of her. But eventually she shares with me that her teacher scares her. And I say, you know what? Okay. So it turns out that her teacher, when she would get angry in the classroom at some of the students, would slam her fist onto the desk to really wake them up. That really created some fear for my daughter. And I thought, why is a first grade teacher slamming her fist on their desks, right? Mm. So in a moment of clarity, because normally I would have marched in there, you know, and said, what are you doing? I decided to let her speak this. So I said, you know what, honey? We have to go into school anyways. This was in a few days. And I said, I think it would be really good because I know your teacher does not mean for this to happen. I know she does not realize the impact she's having. And I think it would be really great if you shared this with her. I think she would be grateful. And she looked at me with big eyes, you know, but she was just young enough to not know what the risk really was. So I said, don't worry, I'll be right there with you.
Yeah.
And we made a pact that I would hold her hand and I would, you know, if she needed extra support, I'd give her hand a little squeeze. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we go in and we have the conversation. And I said, hey, Mrs. So-and-so, Hannah had something that she wanted to share with you. And it's a little challenging for her, but she'd like to share it. And she was like, oh, Hannah, what is it? Having no clue what was coming, right? And in this very quiet little voice, she said, well, when you slam your fists on the desks, it really frightens me and it scares me. And you should have seen the look on the teacher's face. Mm. Initially, she was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, there are some boys in the class that don't, you know, behave, but you always behave. So I squeezed her hand and she continued and she said, I know you don't slam your fist on my desk, but when you do it on the desk next to me, it still scares me. Mm. And that was when the teacher actually then took it in and said, I'm sorry, Hannah. Mm. Like, I don't mean to scare you. Mm-hmm. You're doing all the right things. There are some kids in the class that aren't, but she backed up. Mm. And she said, I won't do that anymore. Mm. And after that, you know, I noticed that my daughter just kind of stood a little taller. Mm-hmm. You know, interestingly, Irvin, from that day forward, she never mentioned a problem going to school again.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, love that. Such a great example. Simple and direct and powerful. Yeah.
Mm. And 6 years old. So the reason it stayed with me is I'm like, well, she did it at six. Can I do it as an adult?
Yeah, no, really.
Anyways. Okay. So how about you?
So there's someone comes to mind. This is a few years ago. I was coaching someone and it was a healthcare company and the CEO had come up with a plan to cut costs. And there was a lot of pressure to cut costs. The board wanted to cut costs. And the grand scheme of cutting the cost was that some support staff would be cut. And instead of having the support staff, their tasks would be automated. Mm-hmm. And this would save monies and it would kind of get them where they needed to be. And my client was very uneasy about this. And they said, you know, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And she said, but no one's saying anything. And this is the other thing as well. These moments in meetings where people, there's stuff that needs to be said in the table and it's never brought up. And so I said to her, well, maybe you're the voice that needs to be made, you know? And so she did. She took this risk. But what I love about it is the way she went about it was very thoughtful. It wasn't a meeting. It was kind of a leadership meeting. And she kind of said, there were three things. She said, you know, number one, she said, I've done some research. and other companies have gone down this way, and the outcomes have not been optimal. And here are some of the outcomes. And then she said, number two, she said, you know, if you go back, he said, what our customers really value is kind of a human connection. I think we're in danger of losing the human connection.
Wow.
And then the third thing she did was very easy. She said, you know, said, I get the fact that we need to save, but here's maybe a hybrid approach we could have. We could keep some minimal staff or customers, and we could do this, that, and the other, do some automation, and it would still save, you know, et cetera. And what was interesting was, and this I think is important, is that the CEO was kind of furious. She said he didn't really say anything overt, but his face turned red, and he was not a happy camper, and he'd been challenged. And she said the meeting ended and said, I felt horrible. I felt that I'd made the biggest mistake of my life.
Oh my gosh.
And then she was left to stew for about a week. And said the CEO came to her and he apologized. He said, you know, and he said to her, I've been thinking about what you said, and actually let's talk a little bit more because I think you're actually on the right track. And so I think it's a great reminder that at times speaking truth to the power is not like you speak it and everyone feels great and there's celebration, et cetera. You may be left with that discomfort of and stewing it a little bit before you get a reaction. And I thought that was such a beautiful example that she was, it was 3 or 4 days of really a lot of discomfort.
Oh, wow.
And yet at the end of the day, it was kind of this acknowledgement that that was what she did was totally correct.
I am so glad you shared that particular example because he was pissed.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
You know,
yes.
This is what we fear, right? Is
yes.
that we're going to get
yes.
this really bad reaction.
Yes.
And guess what? Sometimes we do.
Yes, absolutely.
But isn't it interesting that he came back?
Yes.
And apologized?
Yeah.
Now, that's actually similar to an example that just came to my mind. And this just only happened a couple of weeks ago, but you sharing the story makes me want to share this example, which is I had a client, we, you know, were working together for several months. One of the things we were working on is helping her to better manage her capacity.
Mm-hmm.
She tended to she was a pleaser and incredibly smart and intelligent, but she tended to overcommit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Never told the truth to the powers that be about her capacity and her team. She just said yes to everything. And it was killing her. Okay. So in that context, she started realizing she had to practice something different and she was going to have to speak up and say to one of her particular bosses that she could not do some things that he always counted on her to do. And that she anticipated he wouldn't like that too much. But she knew there was no way out of her dilemma. So she finally gathered her courage. Now she, you know, and like your client, laid out very calmly and very factually what projects would be at great risk if she took on this additional work for him. And that those projects were her highest priorities. And this is why they were. And from an institutional point of view, they were not only highly visible, but they were really important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? He did not initially like that.
Yeah.
And I think there was some conversation that wasn't very pleasant. And here's what I want to share, is she held her ground.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the conversation, and there were other people present when the disappointment and the frustration came back at her, she didn't capitulate. You know, she was respectful, but she stood her ground.
Mm-hmm.
And like your client, a few days later, he came back and apologized to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, everything isn't hunky-dory all the time,
yeah.
right? Like there's still tough
yeah.
things about that. But
yeah.
I just want our listeners to be encouraged that we can face into some of these risks and even hold our ground in the midst of some reactions that are challenging,
yeah.
right? So,
yeah.
So what do you think? What's tying these examples together for you, Irvin?
Well, you know, we spoke about us in a coaching relationship. Part of a coaching relationship is a supportive relationship. So sometimes you don't have coaching, but I think what is important is that you have a trusted person. Sometimes it's good just to to share this with a mentor or just someone that has your back and say, here's what I'm thinking of doing, or, and just kind of as, and kind of as an other person that has a lens, and actually, I think you're on the right track. This is really good. You know, it can be a friend, a family member, a mentor, whatever, but I think that's really important. I think the other thing is both examples were very much our experience. This was thought out. It wasn't a rash thing. It was clearly delineated, and it was a matter of trusting my expertise, trusting the data that I have. And I think the other thing was, it was all done for the common good, that this is not to highlight me. This is not to make me the superstar. This is really to advance the team. This is really to advance the organization. And I think that's there as well. And I think when you have that in mind as well, that can be really helpful.
Oh, I agree. I'm thinking even back to the example I gave of my six-year-old daughter, right? Mm-hmm. I remember that one of the things that she said to me was that the kids next to her were scared. She wasn't the only scared one.
I'm curious, but anything else, Bridget, you would add as you kind of think about that?
Yeah, I think we have to remember, it goes back to that Greek word parousia, which is speaking up on behalf of the common good. Yeah. And so remembering what is at stake here. Now, we're usually more in tune with what's at stake if it goes badly, but we have to stay in touch and in tune with what's at stake if we don't speak up.
Yeah.
And keeping this in mind, because usually if we speak up, there will be other people who will benefit, who will be positively impacted. And as we said at the beginning, for us and for a lot of our listeners, speaking up for others is easier, right?
Yeah.
So yep. Who are those others that could benefit from you using your voice in this way? Yeah.
Mm. Wow. This has been really such a wonderful conversation, Bridget. It's been very reflective for me, and I'm thinking it's going to be reflective for people. And I think coming out of this, I think, you know, some key points is, you know, to invite people, their own little exploration. You know, what's your memories about speaking up to power? When you think about speaking up to power, maybe go back to some of those instinctive needs that we have, like what's going on within you? Is there examples of when you took the risk or didn't take the risk? What held you back? Because I think it really is an important leadership skill that is so often not spoken about and yet so vital, so necessary. So this has been wonderful. Thank you, Bridget. Yeah, it leaves a lot of food for thought. So everyone, hopefully this has evoked some questioning within you as well. Appreciate you listening. And until the next episode, wishing you well. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.